Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. The population and housing census is conducted across the country once every 10 years. The latest one was officially launched July 2020, but it was disrupted due to the pandemic. However, its findings have now been released. The idea is for official data from the census to be used to inform how billions of ringgit in federal funding will be spent each year. And this is to help, also used to help fuel research about issues and communities for the next decade. Our first guest tonight is Datuk Seri Dr. Muhammad Uzair Mahidin. He's a chief statistician at the Department of Statistics, Malaysia. Dr. Uzair, when we last spoke to you on the show, it was at the start of the census-taking exercise. And, you know, no doubt there have been challenges along the way. But can we begin this conversation by maybe you noting or you telling us a little bit about what were some of the most notable trends that the data revealed?
Thank you very much, Melissa and Sharad. Thank you for having me. Yes, we already made known to the public about the result of the census recently. And we count 32.4 million population in this country for the year 2020. And also we can see that from that numbers, about 75% of the population living in the urban area and the balance in the rural area. And if we compare this number with the last census in 2010, it looks like the growth of the population is shrinking. It's registered annual growth about 1.7% compared the census before, average of growth more than 2%.
Dr. Uzair, can we, in this census, will it capture the rather dramatic reversals in socioeconomic circumstances that a lot of people have suffered over the last 2 years because of the pandemic? Will that dimension be captured by the census data?
Yes, we know that this current census happened, it's taken place at the background of the COVID-19 pandemic. The second census surrounding when we carry the census, the social economy that been captured during the census, yes, is a portray is what happening on the ground.
Right. Okay. So can we get some get a little bit more granular when you talk about
for example. During the census, we managed only to counted. The foreigners, I mean the non-citizen in this country during this census, about 2.7 million. That means comprised of about 8.3% of the overall the country population. And I believe this number may consider lower than what we are expected because maybe during the COVID-19, a lot of the foreign workers, a lot of foreign students, they're not yet coming back to this country. This among the that I think that how this census may reflect about the composition of the non-citizen. And of
right.
course,
Yeah, you're right. So the number 2.7 million for non-citizens seems to be a conservative estimate for what we suspect is a much higher migrant worker population, particularly in Malaysia. Can you tell us a little bit about how the census captured this data and whether there were any maybe missed opportunities or gaps in the design of the census that could have allowed for more data on migrant workers or the migrant population or non-citizen population to be captured?
Okay, I would like to explain for this recent census, we really well prepared how the data being collected from the on the ground have to be also cross-checked, validated with the administration record. For example, we know based on the documentation record how many the foreign workers, students, expatriates. And actually, we know where they are basically the location associated to the industry, particularly industry. And during the current census, we see, for example, one of our states, Sabah, their composition of the foreigners in Sabah is what, 24.3% of the population in Sabah.
Yes. So, Dr. Uzair, help us understand, you know, the difference between what is captured administratively, right? So a lot of us have IC cards, and the IC will say, you know, we're born somewhere. But many of us move. We travel for, and in fact, based in different cities. Does the census make sense of the internal migration of Malaysians? That might not be the same as what is captured in the administrative data.
Exactly. That's something that very interesting. We are doing during the current census. We do the what we call data integration, and of course, when we carry out the census, we have to follow a certain requirement, certain consent and definition. For example, what have to be in the census to be counted must be the people who live in the country not less than 6 months. So, for example, some of Malaysians who may stay abroad for several reasons, for example, for career, to study that more than 6 months, actually they are not counted as the Malaysian population. Similar also, during this census, for example, some of Malaysians have to stay in Singapore, for example. They may not across to the come back to the state of Johor, for example. They may not consider as a part of the our population during the census period.
Right. Okay. Well, one of the things that captured my attention was also the trends of population by age group. As we see, the aging, we know that the country is an aging population. Malaysia has an aging population. That's not news. That's not new to us. New information to us. But I'm just wondering what this current set of data or the current data set, what story is it telling to you about the trajectory of our country when it comes to this aging population?
Thank you, Melissa, about the aging population. Recently, we announced the composition of the people that is above 65 years and older. It's about 22.2 million that contributed about 6.8% of the total population. And this number is considered that we are close to become an aging society, aging nation. And in fact, how this has been taken as the base about our readiness on the facing this aging society must take it seriously. And of course, it's very interesting if we can also study and do a further research based on this data, which part of the country, which state, which district, and so forth. And this data must also be linked with other economic activities and as well about the other wider statistics like fatality rate and also mortality rate. And how also this we also link with the family size. We mentioned during the announcement numbers that the family size at the moment is stay at 3.8 instead of 4.3. Used to be, we have more children in one family. Now it's less than four. And also looking at the people living in the urban area at the moment reached to 75.1% compared the previous one is about 71%. This is something that when we look at the demography at the age group, we know that if we are getting older, if we are maybe living at a rural area, maybe the demanding to carry on with our life maybe not that very challenging compared that when you live in the urban area. what I try to convey that the readiness, the facility, and so on. I also mentioned that how we can see how we relate when we have so many older generation at the same time, about they're not really ready to have enough means to continue with their life, they're not enough saving and so on. And are we prepared to create more opportunity job for the people that have to continue to work beyond 60 years old?
Dr. Jose, I mean, I think each of these data points could be an entire show on their own, but I want to take you up on this shrinking family size, because I think if you put your sociologist cap on, you might suggest that it's that middle class societies, the increasingly affluent societies, have smaller families and so on and so forth. I mean, that might be a thesis. But what do you understand is behind this? And is that, are the numbers disaggregated so we know whether this is true of all communities? I know this is an aggregate number. So does it vary between different communities and territories of the Federation in a significant way?
Yeah. I agree with you. When we slash and look at the more deep dive on data, we can figure out the correlation between, the comparison between geography and also between the ethnicity, and also maybe we can link with the education background. As the rule of thumb, normally people live in the rural area and they have a tendency to have more children compared people that live in the urban. And the data show that for the East Coast of Malaysia, like Kelantan, Terengganu, their family size is more than four. And if you look at the state like Pulau Pinang and several states, their family size much less than 3.8. And of course, if we look at the in Kuala Lumpur, for example, there are more less than other part of the state. This is something that we can look into it. And you mentioned about we are moving to the more middle class, and with the interconnected world and the scenario we are living now, people are focused on how to really maximize to have maybe perhaps to do more travel, to less to be less people that they have to be taken care, maybe that related to having more less children.
Right, Dr. Jose,
of course, in terms you look at the female population as well, we know that we are getting more female move to the labor force to focus on career. Of course, we not yet reach the labor at that, like the developed country, they have the woman participation more than 60. At the moment, we have about 56%. And I believe if we going to more than 65, for example, that make the family size or the fertility rate maybe reduce further. And we relate also that having the first child age at the moment about at the age of 27-28 years old. Before, we used to have about the first child for the mother who got married about at the age of 23 years old.
Okay, so having children later in life for women. Speaking about gender, can I point out the sex ratio, the gender imbalance that we're seeing in the data that shows population by sex? So 110 males for every 100 female. What does this trend show to you, Dr. Uzer?
Okay, I think I had to also make to know that number we mentioned is one every 100 female, we have about 110. That's one is for the overall entire population. But if we focus for only Malaysian, actually the number is 100 female, we have 103 male.
And I see. It's largely due to the male migrant population, is that right?
Exactly. Student and also foreign workers, yes. Okay.
Okay, Dr. Uzer, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you for having me.
Dato' Sri Uzair Mahidin, Chief Statistician at the Department of Statistics Malaysia. We're going to take a quick break here and consider this. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. Thank you so much, Hussein. Sharad and I on Consider This. We're discussing the main findings of the Population and Housing Census 2020. Joining us now is Hawati Abdul Hamid. She is Deputy Director of Research at Khazanah Research Institute. Hawati, looking at the 2020 census report, I'm just wondering, what did the data either reveal to you or confirm some of the your suspicions or hypotheses about the trends in Malaysia's demography?
Okay, thanks, Melissa. Broadly, I would say that the findings published by the Department of Statistics yesterday somewhat confirm the information that we have known so far as provided by Household Income Survey, published by DOS Tourism as well, every 2 years, as well as population estimate that is published, estimated every year using data such as death and birth data, as well as migration data. So overall, the findings basically is quite aligned with the statistic that we know so far. For example, the population size of Malaysia stood at 32.4 million compared to 24.5 million in the previous census. And the growth rate somewhat slowed slightly from 2.2% to 1.7%. And there are several other indicators, such as one interesting thing probably I can highlight is in terms of number of households, that being stated to be at 8.2 million, which is slightly higher than the figure that we know from Household Income Survey. But I have to recognize that the number published by Household Income Survey cover only citizen household. So it would be interesting actually to really investigate what is happening among household, non-citizen household in Malaysia, whereby a lot of insights about this household not really published so much in this regards. Other than that, I think they basically confirm what we have known so far. But I think probably I can highlight that one interesting things being done by DOSM this time is that they have published data at subnational statistic at subnational level, which means at parliament and state legislative assembly. So I think this can be very, very helpful for district officer, policymaker at state level to really know what is happening at their constituency, especially if they want to conduct their own survey, that would be very, very costly. And
Hawati, if I can just sort of interrupt you, very interesting. Point out to that, you know, you've said what you think could be more interesting to investigate, so on and so forth. I do want to ask you, though, I mean, when we're trying to communicate the story of the census, right, and tell Malaysians where the country is headed, what impact it's having, these trends are having on the social fabric, and the political ramifications of some of this, what are the stories that you would you pick out? Are we an increasingly middle class society, or are we not? I mean, is our middle class shrinking? You know, is there a large outflow? Are we still suffering from a brain drain? What do we see in terms of uneven development across the Federation? Are these stories coming out of the census data?
So as for now, as what we can see here, a lot of the analysis being published is still at high level, but aggregated level. But somehow I think there is a lot of potential to dig further. But I think one of the things that we already know is that how disparity is happening, is taking place in different locations in Malaysia. And we, if you look at the prelim statistic being published, we know where is the most populous district, which is Bangi, and then where is the largest constituency, which is in Sarawak, Hulu Rejang. But then we also know in terms of basic amenities as well as income level. So. So I would say that in terms of progress that we have made quite a number, several achievements in terms of socio-economic progress of Malaysia. But of course, we should not be comfortable with what we have achieved. A lot of disparity in and inequality at different locations need to be addressed so that this prosperity is shared not only in location like Selangor, in PJ, in all these urban cities.
Well, the you know, census being the master, the mother of all data collection, right? As Dr. Uzair called it previously. I'm just wondering what this data can be used for. The idea is to have good quality census data that is disaggregated that will inform policy making. And I'm just wondering where you see Malaysia benefiting the most from using this data-driven, evidence-based policy making, taking into account the demographic trends that have been revealed in the most recent census report.
There are several ways. There are a lot of ways population census, population and housing census can be useful. For example, the demographic shift that we are seeing in terms of we becoming aging nation is something that we should be aware of and how policy should be responding to these changes. But while we are quite aware about this aging society, but I think we should also be mindful that our demography is still healthy, meaning that we can still reap the demographic dividend where, because the population, the children population and as well as a young population that we're having is still large. Hence, we need to find this fine balance between investing on this young generation, which we will rely in terms of economic growth, but at the same time, trying to prepare well ahead to build a resilient ecosystem that should cater for the needs of aging population. But beyond demographic statistic by age, I think there are a lot of insights that can be utilized for policy making. For example, in terms of household size, this should basically, in a way, inform how we should design our housing to cater for a smaller size household. And in terms of the demography, how this would affect our consumption pattern and how, for example, our production of food and other goods and services should adapt to these changes. And for example, other than that, if you know about population density, where is the concentration of population, this should also inform us in terms of where, for example, more schools should be built, more hospitals should be built. And if you know a statistic by income, right, then we should be able to focus on which location that is concentrated with a poor poor household, which means that
right.
We
so
should...
how are they? Yeah. So if I can ask you then, so in the last couple of minutes that we have, is the country all moving in the same direction? All the regions of this country, we say the west coast of the peninsula, east coast of the peninsula, Sabah and Sarawak, are these different regions moving in tandem in the same direction, or are they going their separate ways?
I think this is where leadership is really important. We know that there's a lot of disparity in different locations. And I mean, it is good that resources being diverted to areas that have the most potential for economic growth and return on investment. But somehow, I think distribution of economic activity should also be spread out in various other locations so that this trickle down effect can be also benefited other population in other locations. Hence, while I think we might, in generally, we might want, we understand the problem, we agree on the problem, but I think the solution probably need to be made more consensus in deciding where resources should be allocated.
Right. Hawati, thank you for joining us on the show tonight. That was Hawati Abdul Hamid of Khazanah Research Institute. And that's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This. I'm Liz Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching, and good night.